KFI AM 640 handle here. Good morning. February 24th on a Monday. The Olympics are over. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we'll do a warm-up with Rich Murata. All right, big news over the weekend. El Chapo, Joaquin El Chapo Guzman. El Chapo means shorty. Although I have a question. How many people do you think that have ever called Guzman El Chapo are still alive? Anywhere near him? Or maybe he just liked the name. It was a diminutive sort of endearing name. El Chapo, I love you. El Chapo, please don't take my head off. El Chapo, I have a wife and kids. No, you had a wife and kids. So in any case, he's the drug lord who led the Sinaloa cartel, considered probably the wealthiest, most powerful drug-running outfit in the world. And he was responsible mainly for all of those murders, torture, beheadings across Mexico, thousands of them. His cartel smuggled billions of dollars of cocaine, marijuana, crystal meth across the border. I mean, there would be tons per month. And in a lot of poor communities in Mexico, he has been immortalized in ballads. There is even an entire genre of music in Mexico, the ballad of the narco traficantes. And these guys, these drug lords, would have them show up, actually the bands, at the kids, for example, bar mitzvahs. Although I don't know how many of these drug lords have bar mitzvahs. In any case, also low-budget movies. He just was captured in Mexico, celebrated as a major victory for both Mexican and American officials who are trying to curb the international drug trade. Although, you know, is it going to stop? I don't even know if it's going to slow down. And it looks like what got him was members of his own family. He has been on the lam for more than a decade. And Attorney General Eric Holder said that this is one huge, huge deal. The DEA, ICE, U.S. Marshals finally began catching up with him. Interestingly enough, of course, the Mexican government has taken the most credit. And the fact that he was actually caught is kind of interesting because this is a guy. He had escaped from prison originally. He had been captured. And I think it was 1993. He did a few years in prison, although the prison became a 5-star hotel when he was in prison. I mean, there's with that kind of money. And think about this for a moment. The corruption, anybody involved in his capture or looking for him, you got these cops making $800 a month. And Guzman or his cronies go up to a cop guarding him in jail or whatever and said, tell you what, you just look the other way and you will be paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. You will never have to worry about money again. And how about this? You don't look the other way, I'm going to kill your entire family. And these guys were given the choice, and this is a famous saying, and the question is, gold or lead, what do you want? And it's pretty hard to say, okay, I'll take the lead. Thank you very much. So a week ago, they raided one of his hideouts, but he escaped through a tunnel. It seems like all of the places that he lived, and he lived in several places, had escape tunnels, and he kept getting away. But a key break happened last November in Nogales, Arizona. A son of one of his top lieutenants arrested as part of a deal that included more than 100 wiretaps. And so this guy talked, and Mexican authorities used technology given them by the U.S. to finally identify the locations that he frequented. And then the authorities and the United States came in, not that they haven't been involved before, but big time they came in. And on Friday, they tracked him to a hotel room in Mazatlan, right on the beach. 6:40 a.m., half a dozen Mexican Navy commanders burst into his room. And there he was, not armed, shirtless, and curled up in bed with his secretary. He didn't attempt to use the assault rifle that was next to him. No shots were fired. The authorities said he didn't put up any resistance. He was physically tired from the stress of being hunted. And breakfast was still on the stove being cooked when they grabbed him. And the authorities now are saying that it was his sloppiness, frequently visiting major cities like Mazatlan, that were key to his arrest. And he became a legend in Mexico for years because where he came from, first of all, he was ranked on the Forbes billionaires list in 2009, but he dropped, that was dropped in 2013 because no one could actually verify his wealth. He's consistently ranked as the world's most, one of the world's most powerful people. The cartel brings in a quarter of all the illegal drugs that make it into the U.S. He would take control of restaurants, walk in, pick up everyone's tab, and he was been called, has been called the Osama bin Laden of drug trafficking, and known, of course, for the brutalness. And the background, the backstory of El Chapo, born into a poor rural family, living 6 hours away from the closest city, educated to the third grade, began selling marijuana with his dad when he was just a youngster. At 15, he started selling grass on his own, and he made enough money almost immediately to support his entire family. He built his mother a sprawling home in their hometown. He effectively became a basketball player who bought his mama a home, which is pretty impressive. He was in jail from 1993 to 2001 in a maximum security prison, and he escaped. How he escaped is debatable. He hid in a laundry cart that was wheeled out of the prison and then in the trunk of a car driven by a security guard. Absolutely no issue as to questioning that is that particular escape. He's the first man to be named public enemy number one in Chicago since Al Capone. Responsible for at least 62 drug tunnels under the U.S.-Mexican border. And he, the cartel, was responsible for Operation Fast and Furious, that campaign. Now, where's he going to be tried? Well, the U.S. has asked for his extradition to the U.S., where he will spend the rest of his life in jail, maybe even the death penalty, because of all the murders that have occurred, even killing American citizens, some border control, border patrol guys at the border. And Mexico may say no, but Mexico doesn't have a big history because does anybody doubt that he'll escape again? I mean, the guy has billions of dollars, billions. So maybe somehow a billion can go to the people responsible. And that goes a fair distance in Mexico. I'm willing. You know what? I think he's going to be extradited. I really do, because I don't think the president of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto, can take the political hit of trying him and, God forbid, having him escape. All right, coming up, California drought. Good news coming in on Wednesday with the rain. Big problems, though. It's not going to do much. And then how we can deal with it, taking a page from Israel and talking about how they deal with their, well, I'm not even say drought, because they're in constant drought. They're the Mojave Desert that speaks Hebrew. That's what they are. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, Hoffman. KFI AM 640, handle here on a February 24th Monday. We're about to get a good-sized rain coming in day after tomorrow, and then the following couple of days, starting on Friday, we're actually going to get a good drenching. And the entire state, it looks like, is going to be hit with the first good rain in a couple of years. And boy, do we need it. Not that it's going to do a whole hell of a lot, but incrementally, every little bit helps at this point. So how do we handle it? And the problem is it's all long-term stuff. One of the things that we don't do very well as a society, as a government, is proactive. We're very reactive. And reactive, necessary, but, you know, it doesn't work. Infrastructure, for example, roads falling apart. What do we need now to fix all the roads and bridges? About $1 gazillion that we'll never spend until the roads fall apart, until we look like Nicaragua. No, Guatemala trying to drive the roads that are half concrete, half asphalt, and the rest dirt. So one of the answers, and maybe the answer, is take a page from the way Israel handles its water issues. And remember, Israel is all, it's a desert. as I said, go out to the Mojave Desert and start speaking Hebrew. That's Israel. So what do they do? Well, first of all, a lot of money spent on desalinization. About 25% of Israel, the water supply is created by desalinization. That's a big hit. That's expensive stuff because that's taking seawater, processing seawater, and that's probably amongst the most expensive ways to provide water. So that's number one. Number two is also using technology, and less expensive technology is treating wastewater. Now, the astronauts, they drink their own urine water. Did you know that? Which is recycled, because they're not going to, I mean, every ounce of water. I heard sometime that a gallon of water costs $10,000 in terms of real dollars to put up in space. So they're not going to not use their own urine for the drinking, which is done and is pure water. I mean, I believe in technology enough that I would drink it. I don't have a problem with it because after it's processed, it's cleaner than any water you're going to get out of streams or rivers or fresh water supplies. So that's one where we're talking about wastewater. Now, we're not actually talking about treating sewage water, but we are talking about gray water, showers, sinks, that sort of water, runoff water. Recycling it through recycling plants. Israel does an enormous amount of that, which supplies a lot of water. Again, technology to use it. And it's critical. California is going, we may be going into the mega drought, we don't know yet, that may last decades if you look historically. And they've looked at it. You know, by the way, here's an interesting one that I read. What's the worst year that California has had that they figured out was the worst drought? Hoffman, you can look it up. Where, based on tree rings and other evidence, the worst year.
600 years ago.
Yep, 1580. Good for you. You also read the same article, didn't you?
Probably.
Or you knew that. Go ahead. No, please, say it. I knew that. And the other issue, and this is the easiest way of doing it, is infrastructure. Israel has, what they do is they monitor all of the pipes, the major waterways that come in, where they bring in water from fresh water supplies. Sea of Galilee, for example, is fresh water, and it supplies a lot of water. You know, the one that Jesus walked across, except you have the dirty feet issue, but that's besides the point. He was barefoot a lot. And they use that water, but the pipes themselves are monitored very, very carefully. So the wastage is tiny. And they have monitoring devices, so that is one issue. By the way, they brought that down to 10%. The waste that we and other industrialized societies have, where they don't take care of it, is 30% of the water coming down is wasted because it leaks, because it goes, they don't pay attention. So imagine saving that much water. And then just pure conservation. Pure conservation. Where you don't have lawns, you don't see many lawns in Israel, where you use plants that are native to a desert region. And we're going to get to that point where you're simply not, we're not going to have lawns. We're not going to be able to water lawns because it sucks up so much water. So you combine true water conservation, for example, flushing toilets. You flush toilets once a week. Well, that's pretty disgusting, isn't it? But you have those toilets, those urinals that use no water at all, and they're being built in every new building. You have the toilets that went from 3 gallons, which now the law is 1.5 gallons per flush. You also have showers that have the restrictive valve by law. So we're doing better, but we have to do a lot better. And to give you an idea of what Israel is able to pull off, Israel uses 90 cubic meters of water per person per year in Israel. We in California are 170. And they're drier than we are because they're basically all desert and they're able to pull it off. So I think you're going to see that coming in the future big time. And, well, you know, we don't water our lawn anymore. Actually, we have fake lawns, so that works out. It's just, I love fake. Matter of fact, I'm going to tear out all my trees and put in all fake everything because it's just a matter of philosophy. And, yeah, we tend to do that. What else do we do? Well, my family, we don't shower very much. That helps a lot. Real commitment to this stuff. Just wanted to let you know. All right, coming up, the Ukrainian president flees. There is an arrest warrant out for him. He is going to be charged with war crimes, murder, if he's ever caught. We'll talk about that coming up. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Bill Handel. It is, strangely enough, February 24th on a Monday. February's almost over. Kind of neat. We have some breaking news that's coming up in just a few minutes. It has to do with gun control. But I'll tell you about that with the next story. And then 8 o'clock, Rich Murata joins us with the wrap-up of the Olympics. All right. I'll tell you what's been in the news internationally for probably weeks now in Ukraine and Kiev with all of those demonstrations. And the main square in Kiev, we've seen those videos of the square literally burning up, Molotov cocktails being thrown. You see, you know, the videos that were just striking is it almost looked like where cameras were a fair distance away, shooting stars going up and above the Kiev square. That's what it looked like. And, of course, they were Molotov cocktails that had been lit and were thrown across, Molotov cocktails being effectively Coke bottles filled with gasoline, and then a rag is put in the bottle so it hangs out and part of it is inside. And it's lit on fire, and it's also inundated with gasoline, infused, if you will. And so you have this lit top of the bottle, and you throw it, and it looks like a shooting star. And, of course, as soon as it hits anything, the bottle explodes, and you have an explosion. All right, so what's going on in the Ukraine is that the president, Viktor Yanukovych, is no longer the president. A revolt, a popular revolt that sent him from office, where he had to flee like a rat leaving a sinking ship. And it was up in the air for a period of time, because we're talking about a civil war. We're not talking about an entire country like in Tunisia, like in Egypt, Libya rising up against its dictatorial leader. We're talking about an elected president, Viktor Yanukovych. And you have the east and the west part of the country, Ukraine, that have split right down the middle. And the reason that the demonstration started is that the Ukraine, with the president making the decision, was aligning itself with Russia and leaving its alignment with the western part of the world. And the people of the Ukraine, at least the western part, or the eastern part, were going nuts. I think I have it right. The western part of the Ukraine next to Russia is pro-Russian. They speak Russian there, and very close ties, and wanted to be part of, effectively, under the Russian sphere. Ukraine was one of the USSR satellite countries and then broke away. Matter of fact, I think it was the first country that broke away and became independent when the USSR fell apart. And you have a good part of that country wanting to stay within the Russian sphere of influence. Putin, of course, wanting the Ukraine because it's strategically so important. Oil, the majority of Russian oil outside of Siberia, which is hugely expensive to get, comes out of the Ukraine. And it's just strategic in terms of its geographical location also. And so because the decision was made unilaterally, actually, by Yanukovych, now you have this uprising, this uproar, where people, at least in that half of the country, in the eastern half of the country, want nothing to do with Russia. They want to align themselves with the Western world, which, of course, we think is a great idea because we're part of the Western world. These are our buddies. Putin in Russia is not our buddy. Matter of fact, the relations between Russia and the United States is at a very low point right now. It's not the Cold War, but it's considered chilling. And it's not good. Now, are we in danger of any nuclear war? Of course not. That's off the table. Like when we were in the 50s and 60s, that was a real fear. And in 1962, with the Bay of Pigs fiasco, we were actually just about at war. And it was the brilliance of JFK and Robert Kennedy that put the United States just below that level and actually stopped what appeared to have been or what appeared to would have been an attack on Cuba. And had that happened, there would have been a war almost no one doubts it. We're talking about a nuclear war. Doomsday was almost there. The Joint Chiefs of Staff were going crazy, almost unilaterally, across the board, telling the president, we must attack, we must attack. We've got nuclear-tipped missiles 90 miles from U.S. soil. So we're nowhere near that. But we're at a pretty cold place. And so this has become a proxy war of ours. And Putin is not happy with this at all. Putin has supported the western part of the Ukraine. And now he has, very smart guy, now he has to deal with a new government, effectively. And so how does he do that? Well, first of all, as far as backing up Viktor Yanukovych, he didn't like the guy. He's an ass. Yanukovych is a self-aggrandizing, just, I was about to say a couple of epithets, but we're not doing the show anymore. A real jerk. Now, the new leader, this woman, and I forget her name, has been released from the hospital where she was under arrest, and she is not in shape. It doesn't look like she's going to be able to take over the presidency. It looks like that Klitschko may very well become the new president. Former heavyweight or current heavyweight champion of the world. Is that right, Rich?
No, he's not the current anymore. He gave up the championship.
And now he's
last year just to concentrate full time on politics.
And he's become a politician. He may be the next president of the Ukraine.
That's Dr. Klitschko.
Right. I mean, brilliant guy. PhD, I mean, just great. How many world champion boxers have PhDs? He and his brother, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they both do, yeah.
I mean, astounding. So, Yanukovych is on the run. He is trying to pull off a Libyan escape like Gaddafi. There's a warrant out for his arrest. He will be charged with murder. They're looking at the death penalty because of the shooting that happened in the square in Kiev, where you had the pro-government or even government forces firing point blank into the crowds, and I think 60 people have already died. 11 in one day were killed. And the uproar just continues. No one knows where he is. The country is broke. I'm assuming he looted the country. And so he escaped like a rat off a sinking ship, as I said. And if I had my guess, he's going to end up with a Russian asylum, living next to Edward Snowden and taking Snowden to dinner, because I don't think Snowden took billions of dollars with him, where Yanukovych did. Give this guy the tab, the bill. Yanukovych, this guy over here. I'm not paying for it. He can afford it. All right, coming up, breaking news on a gun case or two, and we got a couple things going on. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. KFI AM 640, handle here. And good morning to you on a February 24th Monday. A couple of fun things that are going on. First of all, we have an audio up on the website. You know, we did our 20th anniversary show, and outside the gates, as people were coming into the Grove of Anaheim, were a couple of protesters with huge signs saying the devil will get you, or if you don't accept Jesus, you're going to hell, or whatever the hell it was. And I went out. People thought, actually, we had hired these folks. They were so outrageous and hilarious. So I went out there to actually not confront them, join the festivities, if you would, of them screaming at us. We have the audio. Craig Taylor actually picked it up on his cell phone. I had no idea. And it is on the website, and it is hilarious. Matter of fact, people were telling me it is funnier than anything we did in the show. It is that outrageous, and we have that on the website. All right, now, news that just broke just a few minutes ago. The Supreme Court has shut down a case, would not accept to hear a case that considers gun rights for ages 18 to 20. Argument is whether people 18 to 20 years old should be able to have guns. There are laws that say only after 21 are you able to invoke your Second Amendment rights. The Supreme Court doesn't even want to hear it. So 18 to 20 year olds still are not able to carry guns, licensed guns. However, eight-year-olds are, It's a very strange exception to the laws. And once you hit 9, you can no longer have a gun. In any case, as a result of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and this was a decision that was absolutely, I think, surprising to everybody. It had to do with Orange County, I believe. And that was a lawsuit that went up to the Ninth Circuit arguing that the insane requirements to get a concealed weapons permit were in violation of Second Amendment rights, that they just made no sense. L.A. County specifically, and I don't know how tough Orange County is. I'm assuming it's on the same level unless you have a sheriff who sells off gun permits to anybody that's willing to donate to his campaign and or buy him dinner and or give him a new Mercedes or whatever the hell it was. Corona went to prison for all of that. But in L.A. County, try to get a gun permit, you can't. It is so restrictive. A concealed weapons permit, you have to prove an imminent threat to your safety. Not just a potential. I think you're talking about even more than actual phoned in, we're going to kill you if you step outside your house. I think there has to be an assassin waiting in the bushes. And you have to take photos and an audio of he or she saying, I'm going to kill you as soon as you step out the front door. I think you had to go that far to get a gun permit. And what the court said, way, way too restrictive. Violation of Second Amendment rights. So what is restrictive enough? Of course, we don't know because the court didn't lay out, and it never does, exactly what restrictions are reasonable. All it did is say it was too restrictive. So the county, and it's the sheriff's office that issues concealed weapons permits, the sheriff's office is now opening it up. And there have been so many permits, they can't even keep up with them for concealed weapons permits. And the court will allow some restrictions. We just don't know, because it's going to go up again, of course. We just don't know to what extent the restrictions are limited to. And so I'm willing to bet that the court will, if it ever hears the case again, this is the Ninth Circuit, by the way, and it may go to the Supreme Court, it may not. My guess is if another suit is filed talking about the new restrictions, the court is going to look at what is reasonable and what is not. For example, right now, as I said, you have to show an imminent threat. And not only an imminent threat, even if, you know what, it was interesting, even if I think you carry diamonds on the street and you're a diamond salesman, which in New York, incidentally, is absolutely the case. And it's all, for some reason, Hasidic Jews that have, that do that business over in Brooklyn. And they, I remember seeing one guy in the full garb, much like I was wearing on Saturday in one of my delightful costumes. And they carry a briefcase. It's filled with diamonds. And everybody knows it. Would that person be able to get a gun permit here in the county of L.A.? Probably not. I don't even know if they're able in New York, because New York has insane rules, too. Now, of course, there's no issue. Now, I don't even know what the requirements are at this point, if they establish new requirements. But whatever they are, it's no longer required. Special individualized needs for protection. Right now, what the court said is any reasonable reason, any reasonable basis for arguing self-protection. Concealed weapons permits. Also, open carry. You're going to see that, too. Where peace to be the Wild West. I love it. Where people are going to just carry guns and holsters. And as many people in Florida specifically say, an armed society is a polite society. So, for example, you get in someone's way and carrying a gun, and he pulls out his weapon and says, would you please move out of the way while he shoots you 14 times in the chest? Just does so politely. All right, coming up, Olympics are over. Rich Marotta is going to talk to us, explain some of the things that happened. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.